And welcome to Encore. Encore is Near FM's Highlights of the Week programme. And on this week's edition, Mark Finnegan is joined on Northside Today by Claire Devlin, an aid worker with Christian Aid Ireland, where they discuss the hunger crisis in Sudan. Later, Debbie McMahon is joined by Helen Duffy, coordinator with North Dublin Befriending Service, who offer befriending services for those who have experienced mental health issues. And finally, we have an extract from Near FM Senior Citizens Programme, where Austin McCoy is joined by Ken and Audrey from the Senior Citizens Centre in the Bell Centre in Derndale, where they discuss some of the activities at the centre. But first, an encore, it's Mark Finnegan on Northside Today.
Joining me on the line now is Claire Devlin. Claire is an aid worker with Christian Aid Ireland. Good afternoon, Claire. Welcome to Near FM.
Afternoon. Thanks very much, Mark.
No, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming on and telling us time. Claire, you're recently back from South Sudan and you've seen firsthand the situation over there. As listeners may be aware that there's the current food crisis happening in Eastern Africa, and South Sudan is one of the areas affected. Maybe you could give us a little bit of background and a little bit of insight into what you saw while you were there.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a hunger crisis all over East Africa, but a month ago today, famine was actually declared in parts of South Sudan. So in a way, it really doesn't get any worse than the famine declaration. When that comes out, that means people are actually already dying of starvation in South Sudan. Christian Aid works with our local partners in the areas that have now been affected by the famine declaration. Currently, there's about 100,000 people who are classified as in famine conditions, but we know that areas all around are equally affected as well, so there could be another 1 million on the brink of famine. So as you can imagine, the past month has really been all systems go to try and avert that happening.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, for those listening in who aren't big up on the details of what's happening in South Sudan in particular, what's the background to the crisis there? We always hear that it's either some sort of despot who's just running the country into the ground and gathering onto him all the wealth, or it's war or something else. What's the background to what's happening in South Sudan?
Well, you're completely right. It's war. So the past 3.5 years, since December 2013, a civil war broke out in South Sudan. They're only independent 6 years, and there's been splits now in the government, which turned violent in December 2013. They did reach a peace agreement in 2015, but it hasn't really been holding. And last year, we saw some of the worst violence that there has been. The affected state, Unity State, is now that same area where the famine has been declared, was the worst hit by the violence last year in 2016. So at the root of these hunger problems now, especially in South Sudan, is that conflict. So what we do in Christian Aid is, of course, our number one priority at the moment is to reach the people who are facing the worst hunger. And that's a very difficult job with the conflict going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. 28 aid workers had to leave the area where we're trying to do a response now because of security reasons, and that makes a big difference when you're trying to run a big humanitarian response like this. But we know we have to keep the peace building and the violence reduction work that we do going as well. I mean, that is really key, not to let that fall, because mm-hmm. we have to do the urgent response and keep up the long-term effort.
Yeah, in terms of the violence, and you probably would be able to handle it, is there anything happening politically that maybe does an end to the violence in sight, or at the minute is it just on such a scale and out of control that seeing an end to the violence isn't something that possibly going to happen in the foreseeable future?
Well, it was tough. You know, when I was out there, I asked a lot of people, you know, what do you think is going to happen? What's the best case scenario and what's the worst case scenario? And I can say that nobody was very optimistic, but people still have hope. Mm-hmm. South Sudan used to be part of Sudan and then became independent, and they had been through about 50 years of conflict with what is now the separate country of Sudan. Mm-hmm. And you know, they were able to overcome that. They were able to get independence, start trying to put the country together. And there's still a huge effort, there's still huge momentum to keep that going. So people still have a lot of hope for the future in South Sudan. And we know that after 2013, when the civil war broke out, there was a big humanitarian response put on. There could have been famine in 2014. There could have been a major hunger crisis, but because of the response, it was averted.
Yeah.
So no, we know that if we respond now, we can handle the hunger. And even though the violence is probably a longer term proposition, I visited a province there called Barrel-Hazal, and everyone I met, their number one priority was to keep that province secure. And it has been one of the places in the country that has resisted the violence so far.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's inevitable, any of this. Mm-hmm. You know, our efforts can make a difference. It's just making sure that we get in there quickly for the crisis and stay for the long term, for the long haul as well.
Yeah. And as you say, on a wider scale, and I know South Sudan is where you were, but as you say, the whole Eastern African region, the whole area is now in the grips of a food shortage crisis, and such a massive operation required to, and such a huge humanitarian effort required to stave off, as you say, starvation and mass famine. You know, we're all familiar with the scenes now. We've seen them enough times. How hard and how difficult is it to access some of the areas that you need to get into?
Well, those areas in South Sudan are the biggest challenge. Because you have to look after the security of the aid workers themselves.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, you can't run a response. There are other places, so Ethiopia, Kenya and Somalia are also affected. And again, Somalia with the most conflict-related issues is probably the next most challenging. But we can really do it. You know, the year that East Africa has had in terms of weather has also been an exceptionally tough year. The El Nino effect has been the most powerful effect we've seen since we just realized that El Nino was a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago today, that was in 1997. And they've really held out and have managed to avert the hunger so far. Mm-hmm. But it's been a really tough proposition. So basically, we need to keep the whole regional effort going, because if we can, you know, keep hunger at bay at one place, it also takes the pressure off other places. You know, there is enough food around. There's enough food in the world in 2017 to feed all of these people. It's just about coordinating it well enough across the region that we can do it.
And of course, as we're all aware as well, when we see terrible human tragedies like this, and they create the knock-on effect, they create mass migration, they create mass movements of people. And we all know how much migration is in the news and the varying views on it. And we won't get into that conversation, but, you know, ultimately it's in everyone's interests that, A, you can resolve the current crisis, and then B, create sustainable living conditions for the people of all these areas, and that in then feeds into reducing the mass migration we're seeing around the world.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. We work a lot on peace building and on conflict issues because of that, mm-hmm. because that's what makes it really difficult. It's what squeezes people the most. You know, in South Sudan, there were people who had put the work in, they were lucky enough to be in a relatively fertile area, had brought their crops to maturity, and then had to leave them in the field basically and get out because of the conflict, and just for their own security. And then you get squeezed from the other side as well, because of course it's very difficult to get into the areas that are most affected. Yeah. But you know, a little can do a lot in these kind of contexts. About 68 euros, that provides clean drinking water for two families for a month. And that means that even with the malnutrition, the severe malnutrition, any kind of waterborne diseases, which could prove the last straw for people who are already weakened, you know, they can be staved off. You know, for a month's worth of healthy water, 68 euros is not a lot, I think.
Indeed. So yeah. what going forward now, Claire, what's your plan? Force personally, have you any plans to go back to South Sudan anytime soon?
Yeah, it's one of our top priorities. My colleague is already planning the next trip out because, of course, the team there is working all hours, so they need a little bit of relief. And I'll try to go out again later in the year. And it's especially because we're trying to keep this two-hander going, which is to do the urgent malnutrition response to the famine, but not less that longer-term work on keeping the violence at bay and not letting that drop. So that we'll probably be back frequently this year to South Sudan.
Yeah, and on a bigger level than the organisation Christian Aid Ireland, I suppose, you know, there's always humanitarian crises somewhere, and you always, I would imagine, are looking for people to get involved and to help in any way that they can.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're running an appeal at the moment, an East Africa appeal for South Sudan and all those other countries that are affected. So you can find out more about that at christianaid.ie, or you can ring us up 496-7040. But more than just the appeal, you know, we are looking for anyone who's interested in supporting us for that longer term relationship, to stay involved even when South Sudan maybe isn't in the news, you know. Yeah. But we know that there's still needs there. It can be a little hard, and I know it gets a bit depressing when you hear these things coming out, but as I said, in 2014 the response averted a major hunger crisis, and that gave a little bit of breathing space to people. We just need to kind of do the same thing again and keep that long haul work going. So any supporters who are interested in that long-term stuff as well, we've been in South Sudan for decades, and we know we're going to stay longer, so we'll be there for it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Look, we wish you continued success with the work you're doing out there, and thank you for coming on and painting the picture of the situation that's happening out there in South Sudan. As a, you know, we lots of us probably see, then we just scan past this stuff. It's great to get a hands on view of exactly how bleak the situation is out there, and we wish you continued success and out in that area, and congratulations on all the work you've done so far. Claire, thanks so much for talking to us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on, that's great.
No, not at all. Thanks so much for talking to us, and as I say, we wish you every success going forward, and safety and security, and best of luck with the work that you do.
And that was Mark Finnegan on Northside Today. Next, it's Debbie McMahon on Lifeline.
And now I'm joined on the line by Helen Duffy, who is one of the coordinators of the North Dublin Befriending Service. Good morning to you, Helen.
Good morning.
Helen, the North Dublin Befriending Service, can you tell us a little bit about what it is and the work you do?
Yeah, it's a befriending service for people who have had mental health difficulties in the past, and it's just a service to offer a social outlet for people, because when you have mental health difficulties, often one of the results is you become very isolated and you haven't a lot of friends left. And so the service offers one-on-one companionship and support to anybody who has been through a mental health difficulty and might be isolated. So it's a very simple idea. You meet someone for a couple of hours a week, and it might be for a coffee and a chat, or a walk in the park, or trip to the cinema, or the shopping trip, or it may be to go to a football match, whatever both parties are interested in. So we try to make it that both people enjoy it, both the befriendee and the befriender.
And for what age group is it?
It's for anyone over 18. We particularly find it hard to find people over 30, and especially men, but mental health can affect anybody, so therefore we need volunteers from all from both men and women and all age groups.
And as you said, you know, probably people who have suffered from mental health, be it depression or anxiety, it can be a very lonely experience, and it would help, and it is, as you know, when you have a problem, to have it shared with somebody else. And especially, I don't know whether, I feel in Ireland it's still a bit of a taboo subject. When you suffer with depression, you don't, a lot of people are still kind of ashamed to say that they do suffer with depression. So to have someone out there, you know, just a friendly voice, a friendly face that you can talk to,
exactly,
would help,
yeah,
a bit.
Our training is very good. We offer that to volunteers before they volunteer, obviously. And it just makes sure that the volunteering position is for everybody. They know fully what's involved, and it gives them a background to what to expect and, you know, how it'll work, really. It answers everybody's questions, and we make sure everybody's comfortable with the idea, because some people, they like the idea, but they don't fully understand it until they're, you know, they've got a chance to explore it in a group. And, we find that the training's very good to just make sure everybody's comfortable after that.
And how long does it take for a befriender to become trained?
It's 3 sessions on a Saturday morning. We run them about once every 6 weeks. The biggest barrier we're having is Garda vetting. So if somebody was interested in volunteering but couldn't do it for a few months, we'd still urge them to get in contact, because it might be a few months before the Garda vetting is back. And that's one of our biggest barriers to volunteering, which is a problem for all organisations.
And it's most important as well, like, you need
exactly,
that done.
Yeah.
And you say it's people over 18, so you help people as well that are over 18, or is it the volunteers you're looking for over 18s?
Both. We would be a service for adults, and okay. we would take volunteers over 18.
And have you found in the times we're in now with the recession that there's been a lot more people coming to you with mental health problems?
To a degree, but realistically, it's always been there. I think maybe people are becoming more alert to it, and, you know, maybe finding services. But no, we always have waiting lists. We always need volunteers.
Really?
So yeah, we can never get enough.
So Helen, is it people who have been in hospital, or can it be people who have just been to their GP and maybe have gone for a bit of counselling and just need probably companionship?
No, it's for people who have been in care, who would have been dealing with a social worker or a public health nurse, or who have been getting service in relation to their mental health. And then the way it works is that the primary healthcare teams would approve people and say that they were suitable for the service. Because if they're still not well enough, they may be going back into hospital regularly, and for a volunteer that can be frustrating. So this is somebody who's overcome a mental health difficulty and is now living, you know, who is living in the community and really wants to just live their life and needs somebody really as a companion to just start getting them networked back into the opportunities. Because there's a lot of good things out there in the community.
Yeah.
Free courses, even the libraries, and just simple things like introducing them to groups, because nobody likes doing things on their own for the first time.
Exactly. And have you found a big improvement in people since the organisation has set up, since the befriending service has come about? Has there been an improvement in people, will say, by they're not going back into hospital, they're coping more on their own?
Yeah, I'm with the organisation 2 months. It's been in operation 5 years. And from what I've been told, yes, there's a massive difference there. And a statistic that was told to me last week is if somebody who doesn't have a mental health difficulty was to not see their social circle for a couple of weeks, it would decrease, say, their mental health by 5%. But somebody with a mental health issue, it's up to 40%. So it's such a simple idea, but it works. You know, it really helps people stay positive and keep on top of everything, because it's a bit of a challenge to keep yourself well.
Well, that's it. And I know I mentioned before, like, the times we're in, and a lot of people are under an awful lot of stress and suffering with stress, anxiety, depression because of losing jobs and money out there. But I suppose when people have been in hospital, and sometimes they're, you know, they go home, and sometimes people live on their own and they go home to an empty house, which probably wouldn't help either. So if there's something out there for them to, you know, get them interested in going out and getting an interest in a hobby.
Exactly. Isolation is a big problem for a lot of people, and even people who don't have mental health difficulties. And sometimes we find volunteers get so much more out of it too. If they are isolated in their own homes, you know, be it older people, sometimes they don't have as many people around in the home, or you just might know as many people in a new community. It's a good way of meeting people as well. It's a very social thing for a befriender.
And you're saying you're looking for more men out there to help.
We say that, but I don't want to discourage women. But if there were men, we would really appreciate if they would volunteer.
And how many volunteers have you got at the moment?
We have about 20 on our books on an ongoing basis, and then we've just put 15 to training. So we'd be looking for more, because it's on a 6 month rotation. So usually people volunteer for 6 months. Some people continue on for longer. But that will be the normal changeover, So the idea is within 6 months that somebody has more social outlets, you know, they've met more people, and they usually stay in contact with their befriender because a friendship has formed. But, we talk about all that type of thing in the training.
And where does the training take place?
Well, at the moment it's been taking place in Phibsborough in the grounds of St. Brendan's Hospital where we're based. But the idea would be that I'm looking for a location in the RT and Coolock area.
Because that's the area that you're looking after at the moment.
We're just expanding the service in a more focused way because my position has been, the funding has been sourced for it.
And when they do the trainers, the volunteers do the training, where do they get to meet the people? Do they choose who they want to, you know, befriend?
No, we match up based upon suitability. So there's an application form on our website, www.befriendingservice.com. And when you put down your interest, that's quite important because we don't want people... We would prefer if they were honest rather than put something down that just might seem good because we'd rather people enjoy things, you know. So if you are interested in photography or walking, it doesn't have to be anything, you know, out of the ordinary. It just... what you like, really.
Exactly. And, I suppose, if you like reading or you like cycling or something like that, just tell the truth and see if you get on. And what would happen if you just say you have the same interest in one of the people and you just don't get on? Is that like a
block? Oh, well, that's why the coordinators are there.
Right, so
that's
you can go
we're
to somebody
here.
Else.
So you can come back to us. There's a built-in support with the coordinators.
Oh, right.
So, you know, questions can be sorted. The responsibility isn't on the volunteer to sort out any difficulties like that. That's why we're here.
And what about funding? You know, you say you go out with them to cinema. That will that cost the volunteer money, or are they given the budget? Or
we cover expenses for the volunteer.
Okay, so. That's as you said. It's probably good for people as well if they're on their own and they, you know, they need to get out as well and meet up with someone. And do you know what I mean? Have a bit of company as well for them.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, that's great. So you're saying it's gone 5 years. Who started it?
It started as a pilot project under Mental Health Ireland and it became an independent organisation after 2 years under the North Dublin, it's called the North Dublin Befriending Service. It's funded by the HSC and volunteers fundraising.
Yeah, like everything else, isn't it?
Exactly.
Fundraising, and there's so many, and we are very good here in Ireland, I think, with fundraising. We do a lot of it, and but there's so worthy needs that we need the money, and I know a lot of, you know, the government don't fund a lot of the services out there, so you have to do your fundraising.
But, you know, there's some great volunteers, and it's amazing what people will do.
Exactly. Helen, do you want to give a phone number out there in case anyone's interested?
Yes, please. It's 01838 7184. Or our website is www.befriendingservice.com, and there's application forms and more information there if anyone wants to find out more.
Okay, Helen, listen, thanks for talking to us here this morning on Lifeline. Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Okay.
And that was Debbie McMahon on Lifeline. And finally, on this week's edition of Encore, we hear from Austin McCoy on the Senior Citizens Programme.
Hello and welcome to North East Access Radio, coming to you on a frequency 9.3 FM. And also welcome to the Senior Citizens Programme. And we have two guests in the studio today, and we have Ken and Audrey, and they're going to talk to us about the citizens, Senior Citizens Centre in Darndale, and it's in the Belcamp Village Centre as such. And welcome, Ken and Audrey.
Thank you.
And welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
And I know from speaking to you, you've quite a lot of activity going on up there. The place is actually bulging with activity as such. And maybe you'll give us, let us into what's the secret of all this and what you're doing and when you're doing it and all sorts of bits and pieces. And you're two people from the outreach. The outreach department in the centre. Maybe tell us what the outreach department is.
Okay. Do you want? I'll start.
No.
Okay. So outreach is there's a team of four. We visit. We have a membership of Golden Years of 600. I think we're at the last count was 750 members in the Darndale, Belcamp, Coolock, and Coolock now included as well as members. And in fact, I think it's growing. It'll probably go further than Coolock. But at this moment in time, that membership gets calls from the outreach team.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be over 65.
Oh, well, that's a junior
that's team. That's one of the criteria. But what we do is, really what we're doing is we're calling on people. There's some, obviously, there's you know, we have an ageing population in the area. We have people with who live on their own. They enjoy the visit. We try and help them whatever they might need, and they might not know how to get about, get things. So we give them good advice on where to go and get that knowledge. If it's legal, we've been using, we use Citizens, the Citizens Advice Bureau most of the times. They're a great organisation. So they sit in really nicely on anything to do with the legal ramifications of a problem they might have.
Property. Exactly.
But really what we're at is we're really just making sure that they're safe, that they're living in their houses are you know, there's if there's problems with the house, that we get on to the corporation or whoever we have to get in touch with to make sure the maintenance is right and so on and so forth. I think also what we do is we've got a scheme called a social alarm, which is a fantastic scheme. Now we sign up huge amounts of the citizens in this area on the social alarm system. Mm-hmm. It's I think it's one of the best things that's ever happened, because as you know how it works, the family are happy about the fact that their mom and dad might have an alarm. If they have an accident, all they do is press that button, and there's two reactions straight away: a key holder, which will be one of the family, and an ambulance will be on its way. So mm-hmm. instant, there's a reaction to it. So we've been promoting that, and it's just getting, you know, bigger and bigger. I mean, the amount of people now that we're signing up, which is a great thing. Fantastic.
And is there grants for these social
Yes.
alarms?
Yeah.
I know the scheme was started tapered back there a little while ago, and I think it's coming back to what it was before.
Well, we're fortunate that the government have allowed the grant scheme to run. It has a cost, a one-off payment of €66 for the year, which is fantastic when you think about how much it does cost, say, without a grant. Mm-hmm. You know, so
well, that's only just over a little euro a week, you know,
and that allows a lot of people to avail of it.
And apart from and ever using it, it obviously security, it's there.
Well, that's the whole thing. That's the secret of it. You know, a lot of moms and dads are their children worry about them, especially if they're on their own, if they've got health issues or whatever. So this is just really it's just a great system. Mm-hmm. And Golden Years has been promoting it now for a while. 2.5 years now.
Yes, and ideal security systems as well.
Yes, that can be used.
Yeah,
we know that there's always going to be a menacing caller, maybe in a once in a blue moon, but that button can be pressed for that as well.
Yeah,
and that gets the call centre straight onto the guards.
Yeah, and they bring you back then.
Yes.
Or the ring, whoever the key holder is or whatever, the ambulance.
So again, it's creating a reaction.
Yeah, an immediate reaction.
Immediate reaction, which is fantastic.
And which is absolutely fantastic because I know a lot of people worry about their parents.
Yes.
And the parents may not be worried at all. No. To be wondering about the children.
We have a few. Don't worry.
That's one scheme. Yeah. You have quite a lot of other bits and pieces going on besides that.
Well, we have the cairn repair. It's only for small. We've got grass cutting. Now, we can't do everybody's grass, but there is a lot of people, elderly people, can't do their own grass.
They can't push them or get them all started.
Exactly. And
like
they've got large gardens and they need a bit of help in getting that. So we have that service as well. It runs from the 1st of April to the end of September. Uh-huh. Fantastic. And you know, it's now got so well known that lots of cups of teas for the two lads to do it.
And
our breakfast, maybe every now and then they get a treat. But look, it's another great service.
Yeah, even a tea and sandwich and a thank you.
Yes, yeah.
And it's even if you want, particularly with senior citizens, to change a light bulb, They might be attempting to get up in a chair or something, which is absolutely disastrous.
Yeah. Well, we've come across the results of that.
Yeah.
A broken leg or an ankle gone or, you know, absolutely.
A bad fall and can't get up off the ground, you know, this type of thing.
Yeah.
So we're always advising senior citizens never to get up on anything.
No.
Not even on a cigarette packet.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And that was an extract from Near FM's Senior Citizens Programme, presented by Austin McCoy. And that was Encore for this week. Encore is back next Sunday afternoon between 4 and 4:30 p.m. From me to you, have a great week. Bye-bye.